And welcome to part 7 of You're a Bad Man, Mr. Gum by Atterdy Stratton. And we've now reached chapter 3. Mr. Gum lays his plans like the horror he is. The next morning, Mr. Gum was in the butcher shop. The butcher was a scrawny old man called Billy William III, and no one knew what the third bit meant.
"I reckon he was in prison when he was younger, and his number was 3,
said Jonathan Ripples, the fattest man in town.
"Maybe it's because he's the third nicest person in town," said Peter, the little girl.
"Tell you what I think," said Martin Laundretter, who ran the laundrette. "When he was a young man, he probably was in prison and..."
"Hey," said Jonathan Ripples, "stop stealing my ideas."
"Shut up," said Martin Laundretter. "Why don't you just go on a diet?"
Of course, Billy William III had his own theory.
"It's 'cause I'm, like, actually royalty," he would tell anyone foolish enough to listen to him.
"I'm third in the line to following England after them other geezers."
He always pronounced England in this way. Other words he pronounced funnily were hospital, fountain and funny. Nobody believed Billy William III's story about being royalty, except for Billy William himself. And even he didn't believe it most of the time. But he enjoyed lying. It made him laugh. Not a nice laugh like you and I would do, but a sneaky, old laugh on the inside where no one else could see. Anyway, forget it. The important thing is that Mr. Gum has gone to old Billy William III's butcher shop, which was called Billy and the William III's Butchers, right, Royal Meats, to buy the biggest load of meat he could get his angry hands on. He had a plan.
"I've got a plan," he told Billy William. "Next time that big whopper of a dog comes a-playing on my lawn, well, you better watch out, that's all. My plan is the best."
"Are you going to lay down all that meat and poison it so that when the barking fatty eats it all, you'll, like, drop down dead?"
guessed Billy William.
Maybe I am," said Mr. Gum,
a little annoyed that the butcher had guessed his plan quite so quickly. He'd been looking forward to explaining it in detail and impressing Billy William with a cleverness and bad heart.
"Talking of heart," said Billy William, "there's 3 pounds of it. It's been sitting out in the sun since last Tuesday. That ought to poison you, no mistake, Mr. Gummy Old Slipper."
"Why do you leave it out sitting in the sun?"
said Mr. Gum, taking the horrible, sloppy bag from the disgusting butcher.
"I watch the flies go mad over it," laughed Billy William. "Yeah, funty."
You see, that's how he pronounces the word funny.
"It's the funniest sight in all of England. I laughed so hard, I nearly had to go hospital."
"Well, thank you, me old gobbler,"
said Mr. Gum, handing over some money that Billy William would later discover was made out of lies and broken promises. And with that, he left the shop. Out in the high street, Mr. Gum remembered he hadn't been nasty to anyone for over 10 minutes. He looked around for any children who might be playing or just walking or anything. It didn't really matter what they were doing. Even reading a book would just be fine. Just some children he could be nasty to. But there were none to be seen. So he went and bought a newspaper. He opened it up at a photo of a 10-year-old boy who had just won the world record reward for secret burping.
"Ah, this'll do nicely,"
said Mr. Gum, and he scowled at the photo all the way home, hardly even looking where he was going. At one point, he tripped over a stone, which made him feel like a burper was somehow beating him. But that only made him scowl harder than ever.
"You see, I've won again,"
he said with a proud smile, which quickly turned back into a scowl. Back home, Mr. Gum locked all the doors and windows, even the broken ones. Then he sat down to think on the old sailor's chest, which stood in the front hall. It was a beautiful old chest, made from mahogany, which is a type of wood called mahogany, and it was carved all over with amazing scenes of life at sea. with waves and whales and tall ships. Mr. Gum owned the Sailor's Chest for over 40 years, but had never once taken the time to appreciate its beauty. What's more, Mr. Gum had never once thought to open that beautiful chest and see what was inside. Had he done so, he would have seen a different story indeed. It might have been Mr. Gum's Chocolatey Adventure, because I'll tell you something. That old chest had once belonged to a sailor called Nathan Cerning, the hero of the high seas. One Tuesday long ago, he had saved a Spanish village from being destroyed by a terrible pirate called Kevin. As a prize, the village presented Nathan with the chest, which was absolutely stuffed full of chocolate. Not just any old chocolate, mind you, but special chocolate made by dolphins of the region. And it might just be legend, but some said it was magical chocolate with magical fantastical powers. And they always whispered it when they said it, which is why it is written so small. How the chest ended up in Mr. Gum's house, nobody knows. But there it had stood for over 40 years, unloved and unopened. As a result, Mr. Gum had never discovered Nathaniel's secrety, sugary treasure. Which just goes to prove that angry people always miss out on their rewards. They are so busy sniping and griping that they never see the good things that are around them. As the famous song says, you've gotta have eyes, eyes for the lovely things in life. You only got eyes for the horrible and the bad. How you gonna get, I said, how you gonna get, I said, how you gonna get the chocolate you deserve? Yeah, 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 yes. I said, you've got eyes, eyes for the amazing and joy and stuff. You've only got eyes for the walnuts filled with spit. How you gonna get, I said, how you gonna get, I said, how you gonna get the chocolate you deserve? Yeah, 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 yes. Guitar solo. Repeat the chorus with the orchestra noise to fade. So, it was that Mr. Gum found himself sitting on a sailor's fortune of what may have been magical chocolate. In terrible ignorance, hatching evil. How do I know those cow hearts are going to be rotten enough? He asked himself presently. I'd better try eating one myself. If it kills me, I know it's rotten enough to use on that big wolf. He took out a cow's heart and opened his mouth wide. This is one of the craftiest things I've ever done, ha ha ha, he chuckled, raising the smelly greenish-red meat to his lips. I am a very clever man. Mr. Gum was just about to take a bite when he realised this might not be such a clever idea after all. He put the heart back in the bag and thoughtfully scratched his beard. Not the beard that grew on his chin, but a spare one that grew on the wall that he used for scratching at least time from time. In the end, he decided to soak the rotten heart in a rat's poison, just to be sure. I can't fail, he crackled. Old Dogger is in for a surprise he won't like at all. Chapter 4. Mr. Gum has a cup of tea. Mr. Gum had a cup of tea. Chapter 5. Jammy, Grammy, Lammy, Fahammy, Fahappy, Berlin, Stereo, A, Leb, Yep, De Commander, De Stepin, De Grispin, De Crispin, De Stispin, De Vispin, De Whoop, De Loop, De Bunkle, De Merry Christmas, Noir. The next morning, Mr. Gum inspected the cow's hearts. They'd been soaked all night in rat poison, and they were good and proper dangerous to dogs now. They gave off a foul smell, even worse than before. That burping dog will be smelling these bad smells, and with the animal instincts of his animals, he'll refuse to eat 'em, thought the crafty old man. I'd better disguise the smell with something nice. Mr. Gum looked through his kitchen cupboards, but wasn't there anything nice in there? Of course there wasn't. All he could find was a rotten turnip, a dried-up mushroom and a sock full of stale crisps. So off he headed into town. He was in a filthy mood, and as he walked along, he muttered to himself,
"Shabber me whiskers,"
he muttered.
"Who'd have thought poisoning that stupid whopper book could be such hard work? What a bother this all is."
There was a little girl playing in the hedge as Mr. Gum walked by, and she heard what he had said and grew alarmed. "What's old man Mr. Gum up to now with talking of poisoning whopper dogs?" said the little girl to herself. "What whopper dog can he mean?" She ran through a list of all the whopper dogs that she knew. It didn't take long because, well, she only knew one, and that was Jake, that big, lubble, golden old hound. "No," she cried. "No, I won't let it happen. I loves that dog. Watch out, because it's true. I loves him. And what's more, that dog saved my life once, and now I'm going to stand by playing in the hedge while that old grizzler flipping poisons him to death and destruction? No way, I'll say. I'll stop him. That's what I'll do." Now, this little girl's name was Jammy, Grammy, Fammy, Fahabby, Fahabby, Berlin, Stereo, Elio, Eb, Leb, Yeb, Nacomanda, De Stemp, De Krebspin, De Crispin, De Crispispin, De Vispin, De Whoop, De Loop, De Bunkle, De Merry Christmas. Try saying that. But her friends just called her Polly. You will have to make up your own mind now whether or not you are her friend. If you are, then you can call her Polly too. But if you're not, then every time you see the name Polly in this story, your head will have to say, "Jammy, Grammy, Fahammy, Fahappy, Fahappy, Berlin, Stereo, Yeb, 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 Yep, Naconda, De Scrispin, De Crispin, De Crispin, De Spispin, De Vispin, De Whoop, De Loop, De Bunkle, De Merry Christmas, Loire," instead. For instance, she's about to go running down a hill like this. Polly went running down the hill like a runaway marble. Now, if you're her friend, don't worry about it. But if you're not a friend, you'll have to read it like this. "Jammy, Grammy, Fammy, 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 Berlin, Stereo, Eb, Heb, Yep, Yep, the Commander, the Scrispin, the Crispin, the Crispin, the Spispin, the Vispin, the Whoop, the Loop, the Bunkle, the Merry Christmas, Loire," went racing down the hill like a runaway marble. Most people in Lamonic Bibber choose to be Polly's friend for the sake of time and convenience. Luckily, though, Polly was a girl worth liking. She was 9 years old, with lovely, sandy hair, like cat's daydreams, and a smile as happy as the Bank of England. And when she laughed, the sunlight went splashing off her pretty teeth, like diamonds in search of adventure. So, Polly went down the hill like a runaway marble, determined to find Jake the dog before he fell victim to Mr. Gum's evil scheme. She didn't know exactly what the old man had in mind, but she knew her big friend was in trouble. She ran past the old curiosity shop, and then ran back because it was curious to see what was inside. Then she remembered the danger Jake was in, and continued on her way. She ran past a dustbin filled with rubbish, and then another one filled with rubbish, and then another one filled with rubbish, and then another one filled with princesses. There was something unusual about that last dustbin. She had time to think, but she had to keep on running. She ran past a big tree, a little tree, a tiny little tree, a tiny, tiny little tree, so small that they were like pebbles. In fact, they were pebbles. She ran past a cat's ears, which were lying on the pavement, and a cat's nose, and a cat's whiskers, which were also lying on the pavement, and a cat's body, and a cat's tail, and a cat's legs, and eyes, and claws, which were lying on the pavement. Ah. In fact, it was just one cat lying on the pavement. She ran like the wind, and then got tired and just walked like a breeze. But she soon sped up again, because she was determined to save that tremendous dog. It was only after she'd been running for about half an hour that she remembered something quite important. She had absolutely no idea where Jake lived. And what's more, she was no longer in Lamonning Bibber. She had come into the woods, on the edge of town, and they were big and scary and full of shadows. And the ancient trees were looking down from high and stern.
"We are trees,"
they seemed to whisper.
You are not welcome in this place. We are trees.
The cold wind blew, making Polly shiver, and she was certain that one of the flowers was snarling at her.
Oh no, she cried, sitting down on one of those massive toadstools you sometimes find in spooky woods. I don't know where I am, and that old Jake's facing the biggest challenge of his doggy life, and I don't know where to find him, and what flower's probably going to eat me. And with that, she burst into tears. Just then, an old man peered out of the window of a secret cottage, half hidden in the bushes behind her. Polly didn't notice the cottage, and I'm sure you wouldn't either. That's the thing about secret cottages, they're secret.
Well, well, well,
said the old man.
What have we here? A little girl in trouble.
And here this chapter ends, leaving you to wonder if the old man was Mr. Gum, or if it was a different old man who was going to be nasty to Polly and laugh at her and stuff. Or maybe he was a good man. Yeah, and this chapter ends here, with me not telling you that Polly is sitting outside the cottage of Friday O'Leary, a fantastic old fellow, who knew the mysteries of time and space and things of that nature. And with me not telling you that he's one of our heroes of this tale, ha-ha, I'm going to keep this information to myself, and you will have to wait till Chapter 7 to find out. That is what suspense is all about. Chapter 6. Mr. Gum lays down his heart. Meanwhile, Mr. Gum was a-mumbling and a-grumbling his way into town. He made his way past Billy William III's right royal meats while he was tampering to go in. He knew that it would be a waste of time. He would never find anything nice-smelling in Billy William Butcher's shop. That was one of the reasons Mr. Gum liked him, because he was a stinker. There were no customers but Billy William had that hour, and Mr. Gum could see him through the dirty window. He was playing a game of butcher's darts, which was exactly the same as normal darts, except the board is a pig's head, and the darts are old sheep's bones. Billy William had invented it one day when he was drunk. Mr. Gum loved butcher's darts, but there was no time to pop in and challenge Billy William to a match. He had more important fish to fry, or rather, to poison, or rather dog, not fish. He had more in dogs to poison. So, he continued on and crossed over to Miss Lovely's wonderful land of sweets, which was a sweet shop at the other end of the road. As you might guess, Mr. Gum didn't enjoy going in there at all, because it was a wonderful land of sweets and goodness. And Mr. Gum was a filthy old devil who hated things like sweets and birthdays and parties and kittens dressed as clowns. He would much rather hear a piano being demolished by an illegal bulldozer than a Mozart concerto. He didn't even like pop music. Not even the Beatles. The only thing he liked about the Beatles was their name, because they sounded like insects, and you could scare people with insects. So he stepped into the sweet shop as curiously as a paper hat in a storm. Immediately, the air was full of marvellous scents. The powdery smell of sherbet lemons mingled with the odours of strawberry bombs and liqueur whips. Mr. Gum felt sick. He felt as if he were being attacked by the forces of good. When he was a boy, he had loved eating sweets, but that was before he had turned into a bad man. Yet now he seemed to hear the voice of a boy that had once been calling to him down the years.
Where did it go, all the good? Where, turn again. You can be good again, I know it. There is still time, turn again, Mr. Gum, said the voice in his head.
He looked down and saw that the voice was not in his head after all, but belonged to a young boy who was standing next to him.
Turn again, Mr. Gum, you can be good again, said the boy, offering him a fruit chew.
For some strange reason, the boy's honest face frightened Mr. Gum more than anything else in the sweet shop.
All this talk of turning again,
he snarled, shoving the boy out of the door.
I don't like it, I tells you. It makes me feel sick.
And at that moment, Miss Lovely came tumbling out of the back room with her kindly eyes and kindly nose and kindly ears.
and nose and ears be kindly, wondered Mr. Gunn. But it was true. Everything about Miss Lovely was kindly. She was even kindly to disgraces like Mr. Gunn, who could not bear this. It made him want to break down inside and cry all the bad things away.
"Hello, you old witch," he snarled. "Give me some lemon powder."
Miss Lovely's eyes sparkled.
"Yes, it is a beautiful day, Mr. Gunn. Yes, indeed," she smiled,
as she measured out a bag of lemonade powder.
"I don't know what's so lovely about it, you old menace,"
snarled Mr. Gunn, heading over some potatoes he had printed to look like pound coins to save money. He was annoyed to see that as soon as the potatoes touched Miss Lovely's hand, they in fact turned to real money. One of them turned into a jewel with a laughing face on.
"Heavenly whiskers,"
growled Mr. Gunn, turning on his heel in disgust.
"A pleasure to see you, as always, Mr. Gunn,"
beamed Miss Lovely, as the old man stormed out with the little bag of lemonade powder clutched between his elbows.
"I do hope you come again soon."
Mr. Gunn hardly noticed the walk home, mainly because he took a taxi. He couldn't wait to get his plan into action. Very soon he was back in his smelly kitchen. He rubbed his hands together gleefully, dancing a cruel jig like a spiteful imp who snorted all over the presents on Christmas morning. He opened the little bag and sparkled its contents over the rotten and poisoned cow's hearts. Then he gave them a quick sniff.
"Jabbers,"
he whispered, clutching his throat.
"They smell of lemons and sunshine and friendship. I can hardly breathe."
Holding it at arm's length, Mr. Gunn took the plate of doom out of his very neat and tidy garden. He placed it right in the middle of the lawn where Jake was sure to see it. The day was very still. Not a single blade of grass was moving. Somewhere in the distance, a chicken barked. Mr. Gunn settled back in his favourite broken chair and waited to see what would happen. And that is where we'll leave this part of our podcast. At the end of chapter 6, ready for chapter 7, Friday O'Leary. Thank you for listening.